So, you know, the same holds true for you as Sunday school teachers. It's an incredible, rare opportunity and privilege. Yeah. So don't see it as denying yourself that extra hour of sleep on Sunday morning, because it's you who are the recipient of, you know, of so much good fortune to be able to have this opportunity. And really appreciate that opportunity. Because when you think, we could have been born in so many different realms, you know, not even as a human being in the animal realm. Or we could have been born as a human being, but without a precious human life that has met the Dharma. Or we could have been born with a precious human life that has met the Dharma, but not have the opportunity to share the Dharma with anybody else. But somehow, we have all those conditions together where we can really create so much merit and be of direct benefit to sentient beings. So we really appreciate that opportunity and have confidence in it. Yeah? And it's really important. Yeah? So when you wake up Sunday morning, it's like, oh, wow, I get to go and practice the Dharma. I get to go do something virtuous. I get to go and make my life meaningful for sentient beings. This is more worthwhile than spending, you know, hours working at my company making money. Because money comes and money goes. And when you die, money doesn't count for anything. But Sunday morning, I have the opportunity to share the Dharma and directly affect the lives of all these little sentient beings who will in turn, by their learning the Dharma, affect other people's lives. You know, and so I have the opportunity to set in motion this whole ripple effect of benefit that's going to extend for many years and to many, many living beings. And so really appreciate that. Okay, then when you go into the classroom, you do your little opening meditation, or you might do some chanting with the children too. Chanting is a very nice way to unify a group, you know, when you chant together. It's a very, very good way to bring everybody together and to help the kids focus their minds. Go into the classroom, you know, do your opening meditation. Like I said, do some chanting, because there's some beautiful Buddhist chanting. And like I said, the singing, the chanting unifies the groups. It helps the kids all do the same thing at the same time. So there's some really, really nice melodies. And they can be very, very simple chants. You know, you could do Namo Amitofo. You can do Namo Kwanshin Busa. You can do Om Mani Padme Hum. And there's lovely melodies for all of these mantras. Or you can do the Three Refuges and teaching the kids to chant the Three Refuges. Yeah? And like I said, you know, really encourage them when you chant, you know, have a big voice and really, you know, say it out loud and say it to the Buddha and teach them to visualize the Buddha in front of them and, you know, when they're really taking refuge and to do it wholeheartedly. Okay, so that's a way to unify the group before you begin something. Then, in terms of your lesson, my philosophy is have a lesson so that if you go blank, you know what you're doing. Okay. Yeah. But as you start teaching it, like I said, if you get off into some point that is very interesting, go with what's happening. Because if all the kids are there with you and they're excited about the topic, you couldn't hope for anything better. Yeah. And try and make a lesson where it's not just you standing up in front of the class telling the kids stuff. Because, you know, kids, they go to school 5 days a week and there's always some adult standing at the front of the class saying blah, 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 blah. And then you got to take a test and you have to tell the adult on the test what the adult already knows. How stupid, you know? So I don't think that's what education is about, is cramming information down children so that all they do on the test is regurgitate it back. Okay? I think our mission as educators is to create whole, happy individuals and very good citizens of the country. Okay? And that is much more important than teaching kids that the Buddha lived, you know, I don't even know what the date of the Buddha's birth was, B.C., you know, sometime in the 6th century. It's much more important than them knowing the dates and knowing, oh, the Buddha's mother's name was Maya, and, you know, he had this awful cousin named Devadatta, and, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, you use that material as the lead-in to teach values. Okay? It's not the information that counts. It's the values and principles that the kids are going to learn from the stories and from the Buddha Dharma. You know? And you want to teach them how the Dharma relates to their life and how they can use the Buddha's teachings in their own lives to become better human beings. Okay? Because we want these kids to become happy human beings, don't we? Yeah, they can know a lot of facts and be very miserable. We want them to be happy. We want them to be able to make wise decisions in life, to be ethically responsible and not just flippant and selfish. We want to teach them how to get along with other people and how to communicate and how to calm their own minds when they're angry. And we want to teach them how not to be greedy and how to share what they have and how to deal with the frustration of not being able to get everything that they want. That's what they need to learn. Okay? So some of the stories in the Buddhist scriptures, you know, you can use those as things to help you teach these principles. But sometimes you also update the stories to what is happening in the kids' lives, and you use examples from the children's lives to relate to the principles and values that you're trying to teach. Okay? So, for example, you know, the story of the Buddha's life. Now, you can tell it in such a way so that it seems like, you know, it happened 2,600 years ago, and it has nothing to do with me. You know, but actually, I think the story of the Buddha's life is very much like the story of our lives. Think about it. The Buddha was born a prince in a kingdom. He had everything he could possibly want. Okay? Children born in Singapore now are born in this paradise with everything they could possibly want and even more. Okay? Their lives are similar to the Buddha's life. Okay? Except they have more things to choose from than the Buddha had, due to all the, you know, the Buddha didn't have the choice to get rollerblades and balloons and, you know, computers and stuff like that. The kids nowadays have all these things that they can get. You know? And so relate it. Yeah, the Buddha's kind of like our life, you know, like this. And, you know, the Buddha wasn't allowed, his father, you know, didn't want him to see any suffering. So his father wouldn't let him out of the palace, wouldn't let him see what life is really like. That's like Singaporean families. They don't want their kids to see the rest of the world, you know, because the rest of the world has a lot of suffering. They want their kids to stay here in this little bubble, you know, where the government takes care of everything for you and you live happily ever after. Except there's still aging sickness and death, isn't there? Okay? But, you know, in the same way that the Buddha's parents were so protective of him, parents nowadays are very protective of their kids. I personally actually think it's very good for children to go to third world countries, see how other children live. You know, if you have kids here that are always saying, I want this, I want that, give me this, give me that, take them to India for a while. Let them see how children in India live. You know, at least in my country, we can take children to the inner city. There's a lot of poverty in America, where you can, you know, poor areas in the country where the kids can at least see in our own country where there's poverty, and it can shake them out of their delusion. In Singapore, it's more difficult. You know, you don't have people living on the streets here. In the States, we do. Okay, but you know, explain to the kids that it's like, you know, the Buddha's father, parents not letting him out to see any suffering. That's kind of like us not knowing what the rest of the world's like. Well, and how often as kids, you know, do you really think of what life is like in Iran, or what it's like in China and the poverty kids have, or in India, or in poor areas of the U.S.? Now, how often do you really think about the lives of other kids who don't have everything you have? Okay? So you relate the story of the Buddha's lives to the story of these children's lives. Now, and say, you know, do you want to learn about how people live in another country? And maybe that could be a project for the next week. You know, go and learn something about another country where people don't live like we do in Singapore, where they don't have such a wealthy economy and environment. Okay? And then, you know, how the Buddha went out as a young person, and he saw that in spite of all the wealth around him, there was still aging, sickness, and death. And to talk about that with the kids, oh yeah, we have all this opportunity to live such a good life here, but does that solve our problem of getting old and getting sick and dying? And then talk with the kids about, well, you know, what do you think about sickness? And who have you seen in your life who's been sick? And have them tell the stories of who they've known who have been sick. And what about aging, you know? Do you know any old people? And have them tell stories about their grandparents and what happens when you get old and how your body gets weak and how you become forgetful. And have the kids tell their own experience with that. You know, and then how the Buddha saw somebody who was dead. And then you ask the kids, have you ever seen somebody who's dead? And what does death really mean? And how do you feel about death? You know, and how do the adults around you act when there's death? And how, you know, how can we make our lives meaningful considering that we're all going to die? You know? So all these, depending how old the children are, you can talk about these issues in different ways and really get them to share their own experiences and share their own thoughts. And if you make a lesson like this, where you're asking the kids to share their own thoughts, they are going to be paying attention. You know, if it's you, just you in front of the room going blah, 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 that's when they're going to start acting out. But if you start a discussion in class, you know, and say, okay, who's seen somebody who's dead? Oh, you have to, what's your story like? And how about you? And have them share, you know, what they're doing. They learn so, what they've seen and experienced. They learn so much from each other. You know, and then you can add some comments. Yeah, you know, we have such a wonderful society, but there's, you know, we still get old and sick and die. And, you know, Buddha understood this, and Buddha is trying to teach us a way to learn to deal with these situations so that we aren't overwhelmed by misery when they're happening. And the Buddha is teaching us a way to escape this cycle of birth and death, to arrive at a state of lasting happiness. And that's nirvana, you know. And nirvana doesn't mean that you get everything you want in the shopping mall. Yeah. Nirvana means that you no longer get angry and you no longer are selfish. And so your mind is very full of good wishes towards others and love and compassion and wisdom, you know, and you're able to do kind things for others without feeling any loss to yourself, You know? So you just explain what enlightenment is in very, very simple, down-to-earth terms. You know, enlightenment isn't that, you know, you live up in some cloud-like somewhere, you know, inexplicable. But enlightenment means that even when somebody is mean to you, you don't get, your feelings aren't hurt, and you don't get angry. Wow, what do you think that would feel like? To not have your feelings get hurt, even when somebody makes fun of you. Do you think that's possible? Do you want to try and get to that point in your own life where you don't get, your feelings don't get hurt, or you don't get angry? You know, what would it feel like not to get angry when you get blamed for something that one of your siblings did? You know, because that's always happening with kids. You know, you get blamed for something your brother or sister did. What would it feel like to not get angry and to just be able to explain yourself what the situation was without getting angry? Yeah, and then explain enlightenment in those kind of ways. You know, or what would it be like when you saw other kids who didn't have what you had, and your first wish is to share what you have because you really want the other people to be happy? What do you think it would feel like if your spontaneous wish was just to share and make other people happy? Because that's what it's like to be a Buddha. You have that kind of spontaneous wish. Okay? So just, you know, the qualities of an enlightened one, just relate it to kids' own life so they get an idea of what enlightenment is. And then explain that the Buddha's teaching the Dharma to show us how to get from all of our problems right now to that state of enlightenment where we can really be beneficial to others and where our minds are completely content and satisfied with, you know, whoever we're with and wherever we live. Okay? So to explain these qualities of enlightenment and these qualities of the path, it means that you have to think about it beforehand, you know, and you have to relate it to your own life. Yeah. So that when you're teaching, you're not just repeating what's written in a book, okay, but you've thought about that yourself. You know? And oh, yeah, enlightenment would mean being able to go to teach Sunday school and not feel nervous. Okay? Or enlightenment would be able to go to work and feel like I had something very good to offer to the people that I came in contact with. And enlightenment would mean being able to go to work and, you know, not getting angry if somebody criticized me at work. Okay? So you start relating the Dharma to your own life and thinking about it, and then in that way you can show the children how it relates to their life. Okay? Yeah. So, you know, then when you use different stories, you know, like, you know, the story of the Buddha with the swan. Remember when his cousin Devadatta shot down the swan, and then, you know, Siddhartha and Devadatta were quarreling over who the swan belonged to. Okay. And then say to the kids, have you ever quarreled with one of your brothers or sisters or cousins over something? And they, of course, they all say yes. You know. And they say, oh, well, look how this quarrel got resolved, you know? Yeah. Who do you think the swan belongs to? The person who killed it or the person who wants to save its life? Yeah? And why do you think saving life is so important? And how do you think the swan felt when the Buddha came and wanted to save its life? Yeah? And so, you know, in that way you teach kids the value of not killing. You know, how do you think the swan felt? Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, you really teach the value of not killing and of respecting life. And you show that, you know, the person who has the benevolent attitude And the one who wants to be fair, which in this story is the Buddha, is the one who the swan belongs to. And of course, the Buddha doesn't cling onto the swan possessively, but returns the swan to nature. Okay? Yeah. So then you teach kids about being able to help others, but then letting them be, you know, and not trying to control them when you help them. Okay? So when all these stories, really think about, you know, how they relate to the children's lives, you know, and how they relate to your own life. Okay?